welcome back to the Sean Green Show. I'm Sean Green. I want to thank everybody for listening, and also want to thank everybody just for, you know, sticking around, you know, for the past year with this show. And I want to make an announcement that our website, SeanGreenShow.com, is finally fixed and is finally up. So you can definitely check out all the interviews, all the videos. They're all there. Right now, Ray Carcillo, the review editor at Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGMNow.com, and RayCarcillo.com. He's on a super celebrity hotline with us right now. Hey, what's going on, buddy?
How much fun? How you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, like I said, you've been on with us for the past year, and I want to thank you again for being with us for the entire year and sticking, you know, just sticking out, you know, sticking it out with us. So I definitely want to thank you for that, first of all.
Oh, no, of course, dude. It's been my pleasure.
All right, cool. So, we got a couple of games this week. One of the first games I want to talk about was Hyrule Warriors. Now, where does Hyrule Warriors fit into The Legend of Zelda and the storyline?
Well, what's interesting is that Nintendo has come out and said that this game is non-canon. This is not part of The Legend of Zelda storyline. It's its own separate thing. It does not fall into what is considered the three accepted timelines in Legend of Zelda lore. What it is, it's just a fun little romp where you take The Legend of Zelda mechanics, you take Dynasty Warrior mechanics, and you put it in The Legend of Zelda universe. So it's a lot of hack and slash, tons of enemies on screen at any given time. But what's a shame is that the game's story is actually good enough that it could fit into The Legend of Zelda lore. It's got all the classic features that you need. It's got Ganon. It's got a whole slew of new enemies. It's got a lot of stuff that, and a lot of old ones too, like King Dodongo and Goma. And you really could have, they could have made this an adventure that fit into the lore, but they decided not to for some reason.
Yeah, because I played the game, and one of the things that I noticed was that the soldiers, they don't assist you, you know, during battle. Is this normal in this series?
Well, with Dynasty Warriors, it's typically whoever you control as your hero. You go around and you try to help people, and they might give you a little bit of assistance, but typically, no. It's typically the player character is doing everything. So, I mean, it's, you know, playing Hyrule Warriors, it's not uncommon for you to kill 1,000 or 1,500 enemies on a given level. And that's pretty common for Dynasty Warriors, because even though you are typically leading a quote-unquote army, you're basically doing all the fighting and doing all the heavy lifting.
Oh, wow. And what are some of the things you found interesting about this mashup, and what are some of the things you think they could have done better?
Well, I think that obviously the hack and slash gameplay gets a little repetitive after a while. Even though they give you new powers, even though they give you a lot of new characters to use from The Legend of Zelda lore, it still kind of starts to wear on you. Like I said, you're taking down 1,500 guys at once. It kind of starts to, I mean, that's hack and slash to a whole new level. But also, I think they could have used the items a lot better. You know, Legend of Zelda, you know, you it's iconic that when you find an item, not only you take down a boss, but that it helps you throughout the game a lot more. And although there are items that are used for the specific bosses, like I mentioned Goma and King Dodongo and a few others, it's not... That's pretty much all they're used for. And so I thought they could have done that a lot better in terms of incorporating some more traditional Legend of Zelda elements into this game.
All right, good to go. Let's move on to Middle-Earth Shadow Mordor. Is this game an open-world hack-and-slash or a strategy-based game?
No, so Shadow of Mordor, it's a third-person action-adventure, kind of in the vein of what you might see from, like, an Assassin's Creed or something like that, and there's a lot more stealth elements, and there's a lot more strategy involved. And what's really interesting is that they took a little bit of inspiration from Assassin's Creed, a little bit of inspiration from like Batman Arkham, did a little bit of, and then of course took the Lord of the Rings lore and wrapped it all together. And honestly, right now, it's a game of the year contender. Shadow of Mordor has blown me away. It's blown a lot of people away because they introduced this thing called the Nemesis system.
Yeah.
And like what you do in the beginning of the game to an enemy or in the middle of the game can come back and haunt you later. Like if you like a burn an enemy or whatever, he could come back later stronger, but he's going to be disfigured and he's going to remember that. And there's going to be dialogue specifically built around the fact that you've hurt this guy before, but he's going to be a thorn in your side now because you didn't kill him.
Oh, wow. Wow, that sounds really interesting. So that's a Game of the Year contender, so I'll definitely be on the lookout for that. Let's move on to Persona 4 Arena Ultimax. Now, how many characters are available in Ultimax?
But what's interesting, what Ultimax is doing is it's taking basically the entire Persona, all the characters from Persona 3 and all the characters from Persona 4 and basically mashing it together. So what you're going to have is you're going to have a crossover between those two iconic JRPGs. And you're going to have the full roster of all the characters plus 8 brand new characters that were made specifically, that were brought in from, eight brand new characters that are different from the original Persona Arena, the first Persona Arena, plus one brand new character created specifically for the game.
Wow. And what makes the battle system, you know, what's the battle system in Ultimax like?
Well, I mean, because it takes its inspiration from the JRPG. It pulls in a lot of the moves that you would use in Persona 3 and Persona 4, and basically assigns them to specials that characters would use, much like you would use in a Mortal Kombat or a Street Fighter or any other fighting game. And so it's something that fans will probably be, fighters will probably be familiar with, but obviously the biggest thing that is going to really draw people in with this is that if you're already a Persona fan, because then you'll have the recognition of the characters. But the fighting, I think, is something, you know, there's all different kinds of combos and cross moves, and you can pull your partners in. So, I mean, if you're a fan of the more recent fighting games, I think that your Marvel versus Capcom things, you know, I think you're going to be able to really pick this up and jump right into the combat.
All right, great. We're talking with Ray Carcillo, review editor at Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGMNow.com, RayCarcillo.com. Let's move on to Dark Souls 2, Crown of the Ivory King, the DLC. How challenging is this DLC?
I would say this is on par with the other two DLCs that we've already seen. Is that it's kind of, you know, as long as you already be familiar with the controls, you're already familiar with the combat, it's not going to throw too much new stuff at you. But the big thing is that now, you know, because Dark Souls usually doesn't do this, but it's basically an ice world. So a lot of the enemies are ice themed, you know, there are going to be different kinds of enemies that kind of remind you of other enemies from the main Dark Souls games. You're going to have your humanoid creatures. You're going to have your, the bone wheel skeletons, but they'll be in ice form. So you'll see familiar enemies, and then it'll be just as hard as the previous DLCs and probably the main game of Dark Souls 2.
And the question that everybody wants to know, do you think in the next few years there will be a Dark Souls 3?
I think that they have to do a Dark Souls 3, or at least something in that series, right? You know, whether it's Demon Souls or Dark Souls, they'll definitely come back with a new one. It has become a juggernaut right now for From Software and Bandai Namco, and it's the audience for it is just growing more and more. And it's become, especially with Dark Souls 2, it's not a niche anymore. So I think that they're going to have to give us another sequel in probably the next 2 or 3 years.
All right, good to go. And Watch Dogs Bad Blood, the DLC. Now, tell me a little bit what's behind this DLC with Watch Dogs.
So, basically, this DLC takes place immediately after the main game, and Aiden Pierce's buddy, T-Bone, is the main character. And T-Bone, if you played the main game, obviously he got screwed over by the CTOS the corporation that made CTOS. And what happens is that he's kind of continuing the good fight that Aiden started, and basically the fire that got lit under his butt. And he's kind of gone back to his hacking ways, which was causing a lot of trouble. What happened is that two brand new missions, that are including part, some that take you to different parts of Chicago that were not in the main game, and will continue to fight basically against the evil corporation that is that controls, of course, the security network in Chicago.
Good to go. We're talking with Ray Carcillo, the review editor at Electronic Gaming Monthly, EGMNow.com, RayCarcillo.com. Make sure to follow him on Twitter, @RayCarcillo. We got Hyrule Warriors, Middle Earth, Shadow of Mordor, Persona 4, Arena Ultimax, Dark Souls 2, Crown of the Ivory King, and Watch Dogs Bad Blood. Make sure you check all those games out. Ray Carcillo, I want to thank you so much for joining us, man.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, we'll be right back after this.